Hi, welcome. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and it's the 17th of May 2012. Good morning to our listeners in Australia, and good evening to our listeners in the United States. Today we have a very cram-packed show for you. I've got in the second hour an interview with a British radiographer, Anthony Hall, who gives us a really powerful and devastating analysis of the safety concerns regarding airport body scanners. Now, Anthony Hall is a man who I've spoken to before. He came on the show about a year ago, and he's now come on a second time to dissect the report which was released by the European Commission just last month. And I spent about half an hour of last week's show analyzing that, but Anthony Hall is going to come on and really get to grips with it. My name's Hereward Fenton. Truth News Australia is a show that is a grassroots show that comes out of Australia, comes from Sydney, Australia, and we deal with local news, we deal with international news, and we deal with things that are of critical importance that tend to be just continually sidelined or obscured by the mainstream media. And this issue of airport body scanners is just one of those. There are many of them, ladies and gentlemen. As long-time listeners know, there are many subjects which just never get addressed properly, or they only get addressed with cover-ups and spin from the media. Now, that interview is actually a pre-recorded interview that I did a couple of days ago, and it will be taking up the entire show for the second hour. So I will not be able to take any call-ins in the second hour, but I do welcome call-ins during the first hour. So if you would like to call in, if you have anything to say, we would love to hear from you. The numbers are, in Australia, 1-300-153-372, and that's a local call cost Australia-wide number. And the number to call in the USA is 512-646-1984. Now, in the first hour, I have as my guest George Georgis, who is a man who knows a lot about a lot of things. George has a background in money and understands a lot about the movements of money, and he's also Greek by descent. And we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening in Greece, and we're going to probably branch out from there to discuss a lot of other things. George has a lot of knowledge going back many years about some of the underlying issues, some of the underlying currents in the way global economies work. So I would like now to just welcome George to the show. George, it's great to have you aboard.
Thanks, Hereward. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and it's great to have you in as an in-studio guest. Most of my guests come on via Skype, but today I've actually got you in studio, which makes me feel a little less lonely. So, George, look, I know that that you probably aren't going to be able to give us your, you know, an expert breakdown specifically about what's going to happen in Greece, but yeah, your knowledge of Greece is deep. And it goes back many generations. Of course, your family suffered under the Nazis during the Second World War in Greece. And we now see a second, occurrence of what looks like Greece being somewhat taken over and swallowed up by Western European forces, which is, you know, leading to violence. And there has been indications that there may need to be some sort of crowd control or some sort of authoritarian response to what is happening in Greece. I mean, what's your feel for what's going to happen?
Well, primarily I feel sorry for the average Greek, the Greek in the street, if you like to put it that way. Their wages are fairly low in general terms compared to the rest of Europe, and certainly compared to their counterparts in Germany. The average consumer goods that they're purchasing in the supermarkets are slightly more expensive. The freight factor is not a prime element there. Greece's history goes back a long way, as we're all aware, and they've suffered occupations and difficulties for many centuries. Since the Second World War, of course, Greek people have decided to remove governments of all persuasions, from monarchies to right wing to left wing to juntas, and they've chosen a path of their own predetermined democracy. My appreciation is that most of the Greek people did not want to enter the Eurozone, apart from having trade bonds, which are a separate issue. The three countries which did not adopt the Maastricht Treaty with the currencies seem to have fared a little better. The problem was the single currency and the way it would control and dominate the economy, and the way there had to be uniformity within Europe. Europe, of course, being very bland and broad about the issue, is an aggregation of warring tribes for some 3,000 odd years. And it's very difficult to jam people together in a public service theory and say, this is now a uniformed or uniform state and we'll all perform in this way. It takes away from the culture and from the individuality of individual states, and people are very loath to do that. So I feel primarily, my thoughts are primarily with the average Greek in the street rather than with the banks or the government as such. There have been a run on the bank, on the banks in Greece, supermarkets problems. The stock market has collapsed, but it can't go beyond, the stock market, for example, can't go beyond the manufacturing capacity of producing companies. So therefore, they'll reach a stage of being good value to buy in. My understanding is that there's some 150,000 expatriate Greeks have now returned to Greece.
So that is a fascinating point. And you mentioned that yesterday when we were talking. So why are people returning to Greece when everything is apparently in a state of meltdown and chaos?
Well, the meltdown and chaos is to do with people's relationships with their money and with their governments. But Greece has always been there. Greece has been occupied many times for long periods of time over the past 2,000 odd years, and there is a strength that Greece will remain. When the Yalta conference broke up the Eastern Bloc, specifically Greece was left out of that unit. There's some argument about why that occurred, the entrance to the Black Sea and such, but
so this was the Yalta conference at the end of World War II?
Yes, it was. Roosevelt had passed on. It was Truman, Stalin, and Churchill.
Right.
And the decision was to mark the Eastern Bloc and to divide. It was a part of a solution to contain Stalinist Russia, as it was at that time.
Yeah.
And it worked quite well. It had problems. A Cold War evolved out of it. It wasn't really a line that was workable in its full sense. There was people concerned about each other. The West started to worry about the Eastern Bloc, and the Eastern Bloc started to be concerned about what the West was up to. And so it became a border, effectively. And there were movements on both sides and build-ups and then an arms race, which actually affected both the economies, the Eastern Bloc economy as a unit, and also affected the United States and her allies. So the Cold War was interesting in some ways. It was a tragedy in other ways. But we saw that come apart eventually, as it should. And but out of this, the European community drew together, of course, from the Treaty of Rome, and you had a concept of creating a uniform trading bloc. The euro came from that. America had other concerns. Of course, the American dollar being the world reserve currency, there was concerns. When it became apparent that there was a move towards denominating contracts, international trade contracts in euros, then America had more of an issue at stake there. I won't go into the trading patterns or what took place in the markets at that time, because that's a little bit more complex. But it became a concern for American dollars outside of the United States. So the euro became an issue. Out of that, we had another element took place, which was another layer of government over the top of the existing structures. It wasn't a supplanting of existing governments in these currently 17 nations, but rather it was an extra layer of government over the top, and there was a cost for that. And the cost became difficult for Portugal, Spain, Italy, certainly Greece, and Hungary shortly, if these issues aren't resolved. Germany became a lender. Germany has problems because it is a lender.
Now, George, just if I can interrupt. During the first phase of the austerity measures, when Greece had to be bailed out the first time, right, and this is what you're referring to here, right, it was put forth in the media that this was largely because the Greeks were incompetent or the Greeks were lazy. And we had this over and over again on the news to somehow explain it all away as the fact that, oh, the Greeks just don't like to work hard. The Greeks had never been any good at anything. And that's why they're in a mess.
Well, the Greeks have, if they've got a mess currently, then they've had that mess for almost 3,000 years, and it doesn't seem to have been a problem in the past through right. occupations and many other issues. I think the issue was rather than Greece being saddled with costs and issues that Greece didn't have in the past, and certainly Greece did not need. The average Greek did not need this situation.
Because these were just imposing on Greeks a whole different system and a whole different sort of economy. That it was not right for their culture, their geography. It was like imposing upon it, almost like an imperial kind of takeover. Would that be right?
Yes, I like that term imperialism, which I think yeah. it is in the form rather than I think that's very much what took place there. But I saw in the populist media they started touting the phrases that the Greeks don't work and Greeks don't pay their taxes and they've had it too good for too long and all this sort of business. And I waited to hear that back. And certainly within a few weeks, whatever goes through the herd media, certainly within a few weeks, if you're listening hard enough, you'll see it and hear it come back. So, and I did. And last week I started to hear the stories, and certainly I wrote I put a story out in the services last night about Greece, and certainly got some noises coming back at that time about the Greeks not wanting to work and about their taxes. So I don't think these are really prime issues. I think these
George,
are throwaways.
We are just going to break. Just have to wind up a bit there. We're just going to break and we'll be back after about a couple of minutes for some ads and we can continue with this. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Very pleased to be talking to you today. We'll be right back. Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It is great to be talking to you today. I am today speaking to George Georgis, and we're going through the Greek crisis. We're looking at a situation which has been described as a financial holocaust. That was one term I saw in the media yesterday. There's been runs on the banks. Apparently $1 billion have been pulled out of Greek banks in the last week. Did I say a million? I think it's a billion. $1 billion pulled out of Greek banks in the last week. And I've read quite a few stories on this subject, and what we're going to see is Greece is almost certainly going to drop the euro and revert to the drachma. And what the experts are saying is that this is going to create a knock-on effect right through Europe, and it's going to be really unpredictable as to what occurs. And they've said that with the existing euros that are in circulation, they're all going to have to be recalled and stamped as being Greek euros, and they're not going to be treated the same as the rest of the European euros. Greek euros are going to be instantly downgraded, and of course the value is going to probably drop by at least 50%, and that will be an interim procedure before they actually reissue a new currency. But this issue of downgrading the euro, which really undermines the whole concept of what a currency is, because the euros from Greece are going to have a little stamp on them that they are now tainted euros. That's the actual what they're going to do with the cash. What do you make of that, George?
I think it's a very sad situation, especially for the Greek in the street. It reminds me of this is probably a knock-on effect from the global financial crisis. I mean, we all worked hard. We went to sleep one night. We did the same this week as what we did last week. And we wake up one morning and then all of a sudden we have a global financial crisis.
Yeah, and where to blame? And it's always like, it's where to blame? Oh, too many loans, you know, too many irresponsible people getting loans. That's what they said about that too.
Well, rather than the irresponsible people getting loans, I would suggest there was irresponsibility at a much higher level. The above the retail bank levels, into the wholesale bank areas, into central banks and government activities and regulations and such. So I think the irresponsibility needs to be worn at a much higher level. The average person seems to wear it all the time. The person in the street who goes to work, they pay the most taxes. They suffer every time, and it's their fault. And that's really not quite as the situation is. And, of course, we've got herd media influence and we've got tutoring through there. So we've got this constant paranoia, prejudice and naivety being tutored along. So this happens, unfortunately, in economics, and it damages people's lives. So I feel as more strongly towards the people. They should have more control, but the home of democracy seems to be suffering from some democratic situation at the moment where they're not quite in control. They're going back for an election on June 17, I think it is. And, of course, Germany's backed off from the brinkmanship game. We even had noises recently of NATO marching into Greece, Germans camouflaged as NATO. And, of course, I don't think that would have worn very well. During the Second World War, I lost 16 members of my immediate family. So I don't feel as though any foreign uniforms in the streets of Greece would have been welcomed very, very well.
Now, of course, this was during the Nazi purges of Greece that occurred in World War II. Is that right?
Yeah. During the Second World War, Greece was invaded by Germany and, might I say, also Croatia.
Right.
Which has had some knock-on effects since then. So we're putting that aside and we're thinking just in terms of trade and economics, and we need to put those issues aside. But there's certainly a lot of things happen at that time. The Greeks don't forget too easily. And certainly this economic issue in the many coffee shops around around Greece are bringing on the thoughts of, did you remember that, or this is tied up with that. So it's not an issue of economics alone. This is more broadly based. We saw in recent weeks, we saw the police in the streets in Athens and the people reacting against that and such. This is not the way these issues should be handled. These were not caused by the people in the streets. These were not caused by this person not working hard enough or that person not paying his taxes. These are other issues. And the Greek people are part of old Europe. They're not bluffed that easily. They know what happened. People outside, through herd media, might be influenced and might bring about certain or have certain belief systems instituted. But basically, I think the realities are there, and the Greek people know what these are. The Greek people are not to blame for the collapse of the euro, of the European community. It's to do with other issues, much higher. It's to do with banking and political issues.
What do you think is going to be the effect, George, of these runs on the banks? Because what I've heard is that this is going to have a cascade effect, because when people do this, banks do collapse, or the bank has to basically put restrictions on withdrawals, but it puts the bank under a huge amount of pressure. Now, if banks start to collapse in Greece, the loans that have been secured by those banks then default. And then what you get is a chain reaction where banks across Europe start to fail. And that will also be sped up by the panic effect of people in other countries in Europe also putting runs on the bank, anticipating this problem, which will then bring it about. There's this kind of cause and a chicken or egg thing that happens, isn't there? So as the crisis starts to deepen beyond the borders of Greece, you're going to start seeing people in Italy and Spain rushing to get their money out of the bank. What are we going to see? What's going to happen?
I think that's possibly true what you're saying. I don't know whether that will water down as the distance passes. I might just introduce a couple of points here that a lot of people aren't aware of. It might explain some issues. You've got what are called retail banks, which is your local bank where you go to and you have your credit card and you have your deposit account. Then there are other banks, other layers of wholesale, merchant, investment banks beyond that. But your retail bank belongs to a clearinghouse, and the clearinghouse is where the retail banks exchange their dockets and balance their books among themselves, these retail banks. Above that level, again, you've got your central bank. Now, the situation with the central bank is, in theory, they're supposed to protect the retail banks. There's a political issue there. It's a fairly complex issue. I don't really want to get into that situation at this stage. When you walk into your retail bank and you put, say, $1 on the counter, and they give you a docket for that $1, then you can go back and get your $1 later. They don't actually keep that dollar. It's through the it passes through the clearinghouse, and through they place funds on deposit with the central bank, and that money is leveraged out. So that dollar becomes $8 or $10, and because of the clearinghouse, the money doesn't actually exchange hands, it's just in dockets and credits, and that dollar becomes $8 or $10 that can be lent out by the retail bank. So they're actually gaining interest on money that they don't have, because if I write a cheque and I buy some product or buy a property with a cheque, the cheque goes into my retail bank, from there it passes along to the other person's retail bank through the clearinghouse, so no money actually changes hands in that concept. They can maintain the reserve deposits, and they can maintain the fact that the retail banks can lend out more than what they have. So if people queue up to their banks to take their money out, they're mostly not aware that their money actually isn't there. It's gone into some cyber world, and there's only a proportion of that money available. So politically, there's a problem. Economically, there's a problem. So money is brought in from other banks to cover that situation, or loans come through. Then you've got other issues of the central banks and the clearinghouses having to balance their books. So a run in one area will have a knock-on effect, but what is hoped is that over the distance or the time frame, and that they've brought it down somewhat.
Now, of course, the problem there is that if this starts to happen, the banks will start to restrict withdrawals, but then that will cause more social chaos as people can't get their money out, and then that will have other knock-on effects. We're going to break. We're going to be getting right back into this after the break with Truth News Australia, talking to George Georges.
Somebody tells me that death's coming round, and I will not carry myself down to die. When I go to my grave, my head will be high. Let me die in my footsteps before I go down under.
Let me die in my footsteps. You know, that song there by Bob Dylan really sums up, I think, a lot about what drives us in the movements for truth and liberty in the world, is that we don't accept that we're just going to bow down to tyranny and attempt to survive, merely survive. We want to stand up. We want to have something to live for. We have a moral compass, right? And there is so much nihilism in the philosophy today everywhere that basically tells us to just suck it up, you know, just bow down, just take it. You might survive, you know, don't stick your head over the parapet. And I love that song by Dylan because it just... it says it so beautifully and so poetically. This is what we're doing. This is what this radio show is all about. We're standing up, and we're gonna die on our feet. You know, if we get taken down, we're gonna die standing up. And I much prefer to go out that way than to go out crouching and cringing in some underground cave. And that's why I think what the Greeks are doing is important, George, because, you know, all this time for the last 2 years, we've been hearing this, I think, complete disinformation from the media that the Greeks are bowing down, that the Greeks have accepted these horrendous austerity measures, that they're basically just going to go along to get along, and that they're going to accept that their standard of living is just falling, just so that they can say we're still part of Europe, you know? And I think the Greek people, just like the Icelandic people, have said, no, enough is enough, and we will take the consequences. We will be free. We will stand up. And if our country collapses, we will deal with it.
I don't think the Greeks need to be a part of Europe. I think Europe needs the Greeks to be part of them. The history is very clear there. It's unfortunate what's happened there, but I feel sorry for the average Greek. But one of the interesting points which came up amid bank runs and amid stock market collapse and austerity measures being introduced, over 150,000, as I mentioned earlier, expatriates are returning to Greece. I'm going back there later this year. I don't have a problem with what's happening over there in Greece at the moment. I want to see that at the ground level. I don't believe herd media. We've grown beyond that. So I would like to be a part of that and to see what's happening. I have thoughts for the future of Greece. Now, for the last few decades, German interests have been buying up the utilities of Greece. Now, I have a thought where there's some pre-planning. They didn't really expect Greece to be the economic power shell that it has currently been proposed that it should be. Greece has always been Greece and will remain that way. The utilities have been bought up by German interests. One of the first threats was that the utility costs are going to rise dramatically to bring about some morals, ethics, debt, acceptance and responsibility in the Greeks. The response to that was the Greek people pressing the government, let's nationalise the utilities. Now, I think that was a point which suddenly swung home to their friends in Berlin and was a little bit caught unawares. The Greeks couldn't possibly nationalise the utilities. I mean, we bought them. So, and they're saying, why not? So there is the brinkmanship has backed down. Merkel wants to talk. Merkel is going to America, I believe, tomorrow for the Group of Eight meeting. So no doubt that the issues of Greece will be high on the agenda there. So I feel as though talking is much better than this brinkmanship game. The rhetoric is past. Greece is beyond rhetoric. Greece's history is past all that. They want substance, they want realities. And Greece is not going to change. The Greek people are not altering their perception of the planet. They're not altering their requirements for the coffee shop in the afternoons.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing is going to change.
Yeah, it's thousands of year old culture. Life is going to go on. But the people who are trying to take over the world kind of want us to be in a constant state of fear. You know, they've used the threat of terrorism. They're currently also using climate change. They're using financial chaos as weapons against us, as weapons to force us into a mode of thinking that our whole life has to change, that we simply can't go on the way we were before. I mean, this is what they told people in Greece under austerity measures and Spain and Portugal. You know, you just can't go on the way you were. It was unsustainable. People were just living normal lives, and they weren't living excessively, you know, luxurious lives. You know, they were just ordinary. Most people are working people. Most people are struggling and always have been, right? So this is the way power structures get control. Fear seems to me, George, to be paramount. And just on that note, what I've seen in relation to Greece is that these constant drums of fear being played out, and they said, Greece can't afford to leave the Eurozone because if they do, there'll be social chaos. Well, guess what? There's already social chaos because they didn't leave. Greece can't afford to go off the Euro because if they do, there'll be violence. There's already violence. Then they said Greece can't afford to go off the Euro because there'll be runs on the bank. There's already everything they said has already happened, and they're using this as a threat. This is the doublethink, really evil, deceptive logic that they use to try and hold you in power. Now, before the financial collapse in the US in 2008, a similar tactic was used, and some of the top bankers went to Congress and they said, if you don't pass this bailout, the Dow Jones is going to drop $1,000 every day and there will be martial law by the end of the week. They used that threat to force Congress to pass the bailout. And it worked. It worked that time, right? But is it going to work a second time? Have we now realized the degree to which we're being conned by these people, by these gangsters, these banksters?
Unfortunately, I don't think Greece is going to change its ethos, and that's good. I certainly wouldn't want to go back there if the Greeks had suddenly succumbed to being slaves to the European or international banksters. So I think that if Greece pulls down the European community, then I think that's a good issue. Because the people at the end of the line are the banksters and the political puppets and the major interests behind the scenes that we don't could be subject to another program. But I think that the Greeks just go on being Greeks, and I think that's the prime issue. Now, if they're having the panic session is not on by the Greek people, it's by Germany, America, the banks. The panics are coming from another direction. They're not from the Greek people. They're suffering at this stage because of what's occurred. The Greeks didn't need to be in the European community. They didn't need these austerity measures. They didn't need to have their utilities bought up by German interests so they could be blackmailed for additional costs to cover loans and debts that they didn't initiate. So I think that the best situation is that Greece has nothing to do with the European community. They don't want the euro. You should go back to the drachma, stay there, and tell them all thank you for the experience. But we don't need any of that. And to downgrade the Greek euro, it's like a punishment issue. You have been naughty. We have decided this is what your punishment will be. That is ridiculous. They knew what was happening when they came into Greece, and Greece became an issue in the European community. There's no value in that. That's not going to gain anything. That doesn't do anything. What does that do? Train future nations to behave themselves, or they'll be downgraded like the Greeks? Forget it. Greece has been occupied many times for centuries over the past 2,500 years. We don't need it now. We didn't need the European community. Just come and visit us and enjoy the islands for a holiday.
Now, are you planning to head back to Greece? Are you going to join the throngs that are returning?
I can't resist it. I'm going back. Actually, even the populations, I'm not sure of the exact statistics, Bureau of Statistics would tell you, but the Greek population in Australia has actually dropped, and also in the United States they've dropped. These numbers you could check. And there's been quite a significant expatriate return to Greece. So I'm going back there too. I don't feel as though there's a major issue there. I think it's a different sort of life. It's a better life.
Great.
And I'm looking forward to Greece out of the European community.
We're going to break. Thank you for that. That was fascinating. We'll be right back. We've got one more segment on the Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It is fantastic to have your company today. I've been talking to George Georgis about the Greek situation, and George has a lot of knowledge there, and we're going to have George on future shows to talk a bit about the money system and some of the less known things that have been done with currencies over the past few decades. Now, at the top of the next hour, of course, I have Anthony Hall coming on. Anthony Hall, senior radiographer from a major hospital in the UK, an expert in X-ray technology, and he actually works as a supervisor in the hospital to check the safety levels of the X-ray machines that they use. So he is extremely knowledgeable on this topic. So I hope that you stay tuned in the next hour for that interview. It's very important. And we're going to have Anthony Hall on the show again at some point to take questions. I know a lot of people in the United States are very interested in this topic because, of course, the scanners have been rolled out in hundreds of airports there. And the technology that is being used in the US is a mixture of the X-ray backscatter and the millimeter wave, which are considered to be somewhat safer, although that is largely because there is simply a lack of research into the millimeter wave. But what we do know with the millimeter wave scanners is that they do not produce ionizing radiation. So you do not have those stochastic effects which can induce cell mutations. But there are other changes that can occur to DNA as a result of microwave and terahertz radiation. And I want to continue exploring all of that information. And I want to continue to raise the awareness of it and to help. I want people to understand that we actually have to take action here. You cannot simply sit back and hope that some regulatory body or some dedicated hardcore group of activists is going to fix the situation. I mean, I'm working almost completely alone in ringing the alarms on this. I'm planning to organize some kind of public protest, perhaps out at the airport, not sure, because the airport is actually private property, and we may simply be kicked out by the airport security if we do actually intend to stage some kind of a protest. I might just ask George your opinion on that. I mean, what do you think about the idea of being bathed by radiation as a precondition for air travel?
I'm having trouble being bathed by government propaganda. Radiation, I think, will have a greater mutation on me than that. It's really unfortunate that these things have came about. When we were doing a little bit of research on this, I have a notion, I call it reverse research. So you go straight to the companies or the individuals who would have the most interest. You look for financial interests. Then you search around there and try and join up the dots to where you're standing with this equipment. And sure enough, it all lines up in a straight line.
It does, doesn't it?
With individuals and with companies. I'm sure Harold will expand on that in a short while. But it's very interesting where we don't have to sit back and say, oh, we need this because terrorism is a new communism, or because this is keeping us all safe, or I feel better for it, or the government wouldn't lie to me, government is my protector. We need to be conscious of all these things. And certainly issues have happened in the past. We've got some very broad-ranging issues. You've got your vaccinations and your fluoride in your water. Those are very, very broad issues at hand where government does not consult us.
And it's always for the greater good. It's always like, well, a few people might be affected by it in an adverse way, and it's known that fluoride does cause fluorosis in some people, but then they say, greater good, we have this wonderful benefit. Vaccines, it's acknowledged some people have reactions to vaccines, but then they say, greater good, herd immunity. With body scanners, they say the same thing, greater good. Well, maybe a few people are going to get cancer, but guess what? We're going to be protected from those evil, nasty terrorists with their box cutters.
Yes, I'm really concerned about those terrorists with their box cutters, and I hope all these scanning devices will find the box cutters, because I would have a great problem getting onto an aircraft if I thought an Egyptian with a foreign passport was on there with a pair of box cutters. Now, that would really terrorise me. So I have problems in those areas. So I'm
indeed,
grateful.
And you know, if they're able to actually take over a plane and fly it into a building just armed with a box cutter, you've got to realise that these guys are incredibly resourceful. And I would suspect, even without a box cutter, just with their bare hands, one of these Al Qaeda maniacs, right, could just grab an air steward, right, by the throat, right, screaming some sort of jihadi sort of, you know.
It has to be, yes, yes.
Guttural, yeah. Cry.
Guttural, yes.
And threatening to strangle the flight attendant if the pilot does not come out of the cockpit and let, you know, Honey Hunjour or whatever his name might be, you know, the 4 foot guy who supposedly flew the plane into the Pentagon, into the cockpit to take over, to fly the plane into the buildings. You see, even with all of this brilliant technology of the scanners, these hijackers have such amazing abilities that they're even able to, you know, to actually fly planes without air traffic control, without all of the assistance that a normal pilot gets. And all they've got to do is just, you know, create some diversion or distraction, and the pilot will come running out of the cockpit and just hand over control to the hijacker. We've seen that on 9/11. We know it happens.
Of course it does, and I'll never deny that. Unfortunately, in one of my past lives, I had a commercial pilot's license, and I flew for many years. Now, I think perhaps it's my intelligence, I don't know. I think I would have had difficulty trying to get that aircraft around at that tight circle and slam it into those buildings or through the doorway at the Pentagon. I think there may be specialist training, and unfortunately, we haven't got the full degree of training that these terrorist pilots had. So I'm a little bit confused about these issues.
Indeed.
There's certainly some scientific questions there, but I would never question an official version of reality. That's not in my not in my program, but I would certainly have difficulty. So perhaps we should include aiming as one of the courses in commercial licensing. I don't know. Should we do that, Herowood, do you think? Or
aiming at buildings?
Aiming at buildings, yes. And the other interesting thing was I thought, but of course I was wrong, I thought these buildings were designed to be able to take multiple hits by aircraft. But of course that's you know, I was wrong. And when the Empire State Building was hit at the end of the Second World War, that was only rivets, of course. It wasn't, and it still stood there. So I'm still confused. But
indeed,
but I do accept what I'm told. I do accept what I'm told.
But there's a whole new generation of evil wickedness out there. We had the underwear bomber, right? Of course, we had the shoe bomber before that.
Yes.
These evil geniuses, right? The shoe bomber. He had plastic explosive in his shoe.
Horrendous.
Which he tried to ignite with a match. And guess what? It didn't go off.
Ah, oh, just as well.
The shoe bomber failed. But as a result of the shoe bomber, everyone was forced to take their shoes off forevermore before going through security. And then we had the underwear bomber.
Well,
underwear bomber, again, was so wicked, so unbelievably wicked. He put plastic explosives in his underwear, but again, spectacularly failed to make the explosives go off. But because of that, we now have strip searches in the form of body scanners in all airports, coming to Australia very soon, coming to an airport near you, because of Abdel Muttalab, the underwear bomber, who Kurt Haskell, in a sworn testimony, has said was ushered onto the plane by men in sharp suits, who said that he didn't have a passport, but we do this sort of thing all the time. He was put on the plane without a passport. But this is what we're being protected against. This type of evil, genius terrorism, which mysteriously fails most of the time to actually do anything, except on 9/11, when, of course, without any explosives or without anything like that, just with really their bare hands, you know, a box cutter is a flimsy little knife that's really pretty, you know, not really a weapon of combat, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's hard to kind of like really brandish a box cutter. But they proved that with those mere box cutters, they could take down three buildings. So where does that leave us? I've kind of rambled on into a rant that has no proper conclusion.
Well, I think that the only logical thing is that the person must be fully x-rayed. They might need CAT scans, as well as full radiation, certainly remove their shoes and underwear.
But what about
given?
The other body cavities, George? Well, I mean, the plastic explosive can easily be inserted in body cavities. I mean, you could swallow it, right?
Yes.
It could be in your stomach, and you could be in other places.
Well, the only thing that the only way we could cover that situation is to lock up each potential passenger in a room for 24 hours with no food and water. And then whatever may have been inserted or swallowed at that time may have passed, hopefully, so that the rest of the aircraft can be safe. But then again, we've still got the problem of someone sneaking on board with the box cutters or with the paper planes or whatever else they're using these days. Or it's just extraordinary. Could it be that these nations are creating their own problems? Could it be?
Could it be? And we'll have to leave that for another show. We'll leave you in suspense there. It's, you know, it's such a mystery and only time will tell. But, you know, we'll track it here at Truth News. We'll be tracking that and we'll be bringing you the latest expert testimony and all the latest expert reports as they come out from glorious government bodies of research like NIST, which, by the way, also led one of the reports into body scanners. Of course, infamously, NIST did the reports into the collapse of the World Trade Center. And we will be back after this break with hour two of the show with Anthony Hall to talk about body scanners, and he will be deconstructing some of those reports. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It is great to be talking to you today. Do not go away. Stay with us.